It's just Stefan Muller. Welcome to the Forever Student.
Oh, thank you.
I think this is a first where you're not the one interviewing, you're the one being interviewed.
I think it's the second time, but it's the first time you and I are doing a podcast.
It is. Right? And what better reason do we have than you finishing 100K?
There we go.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You know what? We have a list of questions from everyone that sent you on Instagram. And even when I told some people that I'm sitting down with you, I got some questions. But before I get to other people's question, I'm going to ask you one question. And just a little bit of backstory to this. For people that don't know, I've known Stefan since 2013. All right. And I've known him through all the stages that he went through, by the way. All right. We're not going to say all of them in details because it's a halal podcast.
Mm.
All right. But we used to have a really good time. We used to go out a lot. You know what I mean? Like 4 a.m. and sleep until 12. And then throughout that journey, when we were much younger, Stefan, you had a change.
Mm.
All right. And to me, it started when, and I don't know if it was all of a sudden, but to me, it was all of a sudden. He comes to me and he goes like, I'm going to a silent retreat.
Mm.
All right. And from there, that switch changed in his head, where when he came back, I think you learned a lot about yourself, or you were even eager to learn more about yourself because of what you learned throughout that retreat. And you started going throughout that path more of like mental health, wellness, and a better lifestyle. So before we get into why the 100K, which I'm sure all of us want to know, why the hell did you choose 100K? Let's go back through time and take me through the process of that switch.
Okay. That's a very good question.
Thank you.
I'm trying to think of when that happened. I think I was 27.
2016, I think, no?
Yeah, I think the silent retreat was in 2017. And what I remember vividly was a few months before that, I was working at Nike. I was working on a startup. And I was doing my MBA,
yeah,
all at the same time. And I don't struggle with like time management. I don't struggle with sacrifice. I never really have. What I struggle with a lot was like switching attention between those three things. So like working until 6 p.m., coming home, then studying, then working on the startup idea. So like 16, 18 hour days. Now, there came a point where, and I remember this so vividly, it was a big shift in my mindset. It was a big shift in my life where I was reading through a finance book, preparing for a test, and like three pages in, I was like, what am I doing? You know, the question you ask yourself, like, yeah. why am I doing this? And typically what I did was I would go on YouTube and I would like watch a Gary Vee talk and just let him scream at me for 2 minutes. And like after those 2 minutes, it was like, Stefan, just get back to work sort of thing. And then you just get back to it and you beast it out.
Old Ammo Gary.
Yeah, exactly. And this time I stumbled upon a Jay Shetty video. And the Jay Shetty video was with Tom Bilyeu on impact theory. And the question that he asked was, why do we do what we do? And then I took that question, I started applying it to the rest of my life. So why do we wear what we wear, eat what we eat, live where we live, drive what we drive, work where we work, hang out with who we hang out with? Like, basically just questioning everything. And I don't think we do that enough or ever do that, really, especially in that depth. And so I did this from like 11 p.m. until like 3 a.m., where I just started writing and like thinking and whatever else. And so the first thing that popped into mind was like, why am I doing this MBA? Like, for whoever doesn't know, my mom's Indian. So like education and security is typically quite important. Like, is that something why I'm doing it, or to make my parents proud, or is it for status, or is it for
actually higher salary or whatever?
Yeah, or is it for the network, or is it actually to progress your knowledge? And there's no wrong answer, but like you need to answer those questions and then see, is that what's in line with who I am and what I want to be and what I want to do? And for me, the answers didn't add up. So the next morning, I quit my MBA. The next morning, I stopped working on this startup. I continued at Nike. And immediately I started becoming a bit more self-aware. I started becoming more in tune with myself. And then August came around. So this was in May. August came around. And I somehow stumbled upon the silent retreat. I don't even know where it came from. But it's a place called Kopan Monastery in Nepal. They have a website, which was like impressive to begin with, because it's literally like a Buddhist monastery, 200 Tibetan Buddhist monks live there. And you can basically go there and take a course. Like you can do a course in the principles of Buddhism and how to apply them to your daily life. So that's what I did. I did 10 days of silence. And then you had these teachings going on at the same time. And then you had like 6 hours of meditation a day. And you don't have a phone. You don't have your laptop. Like you don't have any connection with the outside world. But obviously like your parents would have the phone number of the monastery in case you wanted to get in touch or whatever. So that for me was like a gigantic breakthrough moment. Like that was a time where you learn so much about yourself. And the main reason I would actually recommend it to quite a few people is it's the only time that you're going to be in a room or in a space where you're forced to confront your thoughts. So you have to, like, whenever we have a difficult thought that enters our mind, the first thing we do is distract ourselves, right? We watch Netflix, we message this person, like, yeah, whatever it may be. There's so much distractions already around us. So we don't necessarily take the time and say, okay, cool, let's deal with this. This was a time where for 10 days, whatever came to your mind, there was no escaping it. You had to go through it. So whether this is trauma, whether this is doubt, whether this is like anxieties, it doesn't matter. You had to deal with it, good and bad. And I came back from that. And I think that was the time where the shift really happened, where I started looking at life very differently. Not in the sense of like, oh, I'm going to run 100K and like push myself physically.
Years later, yeah.
Yeah. But at least
mental awareness,
like self-awareness, prioritizing myself,
yeah,
but also like thinking in a much like healthier way.
True.
Not just physically healthy in terms of like, okay, let's start really caring about what we eat and what we drink and like, let's stop partying as much. But also just mentally like implementing practices, yeah, on a day-to-day, whether it's meditation, whether it's journaling, whether it's whatever. And normalizing that, because I think, yeah, in our society, like things like journaling were like, oh, bro, you journal.
It was very taboo.
Yeah. Like who, yeah, does that? You know, like now I think we're at a stage where it's being normalized because there's so much benefit in it.
I think also what you learned, and maybe this is to put it another way, I think it also taught you what a different meaning of being happy.
Mm.
Because I remember like for us being happy was, all right, let's go out. Let's see our friends. Let's stay up at night. Let's party. Let's travel. And that for us was being happy. But then you came back with a different meaning of happiness where, yes, that is something that makes you happy, but there are other ways that can make you happy internally and externally. And that's what you started applying towards your life.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think it became like you start simplifying happiness, right? Like you start looking at what are the things that truly need to be happy. And typically once you really get to a point where it's not material goods anymore.
True.
Where it's family, it's friendships, it's relationships, it's mental and physical health. Like if you have all of those things and you have security in your life to an extent, obviously, that like you have food on the table and like a roof above your head, then like your bases are covered.
Yeah.
Versus what we used to think. I mean, Akawi and I used to have discussions around this about like which car are we going to drive and like,
yeah,
where are we going to eat and where are we going to go out and all these sort of things. And like, we associated that recognition and that like status with being cool and accepted and whatever.
Your first car was a Camaro, bro.
Yeah, I know. Mistake of the century from my side. But yeah, that you're right. Yeah. It definitely shifted as well.
Before we switch to 100K, and I know this is why we're here, but I'll tell you why I'm going to ask you these questions, because when you were in Italy or when people that know that we're best friends saw me out and they go like, Stefan is doing 100K since when? Like, why? What's on? And I was like, it's something that he wants to do. It's between him and himself. It's not for anyone else. But it's also, and they're like, since when was he like this? And I used to mention the silent retreat, and everyone said the same thing. Like, I don't think I can handle myself doing that.
The silent retreat.
So if you had to, and this is going to be the end of about the silent retreat, you can get into the 100K, but because this was a frequently asked question to me when I was out about you, or in general about the silent retreat. Like for people that as soon as I said silent retreat and I said 10 days to what you just mentioned, they go into shock. No, I can't do that. It's too hard. I can't even last a couple of hours. So if someone wants to go and do that, what are the couple of steps that you recommend to them to do either before, or how should they think in order to make that decision to go to the silent retreat?
Yeah, I think one comment immediately I'll say is that like being silent is really not that difficult. Like even for me when I went, like the being silent is not like that challenging. The hard part about it was I was learning so much, like emotionally, and like there are so many breakthroughs. And I wanted to discuss that with people. Like, I wanted to share that with people, and like just have those discussions with the people that were around me, right? Like, I think that was the only time where I was like, oh, I really want to talk. But when I finished the 10 days, I almost didn't want to speak. Yeah. Like, it was just you get into such a peaceful state. So the first thing is, it's not that difficult. The second thing is, you do need to, two things. I think one is, you need to become very aware of your words. I believe that we speak a lot more than we need to. So that's one thing. And the second thing is, like, start practicing solitude, right? The first step is, can you spend like 10 minutes by yourself? It doesn't need to be a meditation. Like, you can literally just sit on the couch, put your phone away, like put everything off and just sit for 10 minutes. Can you do that? Like, start building it up. The silent retreat for me was extremely challenging, but I practiced. I practiced meditation. I practiced being quiet. I went through that training in order to get there. And I think that's super important. Like, the same way I would train for a race, the same way you got to train for, yeah, you got to prepare for everything in life, right? No matter how big or small it is. So you can't just jump into it, because like the results are not going to be as you would want them to be. So I think the two things are, like, kind of start like looking at your day-to-day and how much you're talking and these sort of things, and also analyzing other people. And the second thing is practicing solitude, even if it's 5 minutes, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 10 minutes a day.
100%. And I think you're right. We do speak more than we listen. And that's super important. That's something that we need to be aware about. Now, speaking of listening, it's our turn to listen to you for the most important question of today. Stefan Müller, why 100K?
Okay. I know. I get asked this question a lot. And I typically get asked it after, like, someone saying, oh, you're like, you've lost your mind, or you're crazy. And I would have agreed with you, I think, like 10 years ago. Because 10 years ago when I was training, my coach, Joao, he was running 100K runs. And I genuinely thought there was something wrong with him. Like, I thought...
Because he was just running it for fun. Like,
yeah, yeah. Like, there wasn't a prize, or there wasn't any... Like, he was just waking up early on the weekends and, like, going out for long runs and then running 100K. And I just didn't grasp it until, obviously, recently. But I've been training for this for a year. And I decided to do this... I've been wanting to do this for a long time. Why? The why has become a lot more clear.
As soon as you answered the why, can you tell me if the why changed, or if did you add on more to your why before you did it and after you did it? Did the why change?
100%. Okay. So in 2018, I ran the Beirut Marathon, 42 kilometers. And I trained super hard for it. And the harder you train, the easier the race becomes. The race was easy enough for me to finish it and say, I want to do an ultra marathon. And that was just physical challenge at that point. The first thing that came to mind was 100, just because it made sense from a numbers standpoint, right? As time progressed and I then like looked at the 100 a bit more seriously, there were three main reasons. Reason number one was, I wanted to prove to myself that it's doable and that I can be almost in this. And it was like it's not selfish, but it's such a strange reason where it's like, you want to belong to the elite of the elite. I was like,
you're allowed to say selfish.
Yeah.
You're allowed to be selfish when, like, it comes to things like this.
I wanted to be uncommon. Like, I didn't want to, like, a marathon, I was like, okay, fantastic. And already, like, you're like 0.1% or 0.01% of people like run a marathon. But I was like, I want to push that a little bit further. Like, what is it that people are going to look at me and going to be like, you have lost your mind. How are you going to do that?
That fueled you.
That fueled me, right? So the first thing was, prove to myself that I could do it. Because when people ask me, like, how are you going to do that? I was like, oh, you know what? I actually don't know.
Because this was when you told me, I said, over how many days, Stefan?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I get that a lot. Yeah. Or it's like, are you gonna keep running? Like, how many times do you get to stop? And I was like, you don't. Like, you, it's one race. But so the first thing was, like, really prove it to myself, both physically and mentally, and just like that there's no limits, right? Like the human being is an incredible machine that can run and can endure and like can go on.
We underestimate the human body, you're right.
We underestimate it. And we underestimate ourselves. Yeah. Like you, like someone might look at me and say, well, he can do it, but there's no way I can do it. I guarantee you can do it, right? Like it's been a long time in the making for me. It's not like an overnight thing. And I've always been an athlete, which is like obviously aided to me being able to do this. But you can also do it. So that was point number one. Point number two was to inspire people to find their 100K. Now, when I run 100K, that simply means I've set a gigantic goal for myself, which is extremely intimidating. And at the time of me setting that goal, it's totally impossible for me to achieve it, right? Like a year ago, I would never be able to run it. Just for context, I struggled in January of last year to run a 10K. So just to give you a bit of context, so in 15 months, in 14 months, like that transformed. Now, I don't think everyone should run 100K, but I think you should find like that big goal, right? Like the big thing that you want to work towards. It could be learning an instrument, learning a language. It could be starting a business. It could be running a 5K. It could be another physical goal. Like whatever that may be, make it something that's going to take you a year of work to get there. Because for me, goals that are worthy are not goals that you can reach next week or the week after, right? Or like from a scale standpoint. So another thing was that. The last thing was exactly the point around goal setting. I wanted to set a massive goal 12 months where I had to completely transform as a human being, right? Because the thing is with training like this is you have to sacrifice nights out, social relationships, time with family, food, alcohol, whatever it may be. You have to sacrifice it. It's not going to happen. Number two is you have to build this like relentless discipline, right? Like you have to wake up at 4 a.m. on a Sunday and go and run 6 hours. No one wants to do that, right? Including myself. Like when the alarm clock goes off, I'm like, oh my God, let's go run for six hours. I'm like, oh God, I have to do this. But I know if I don't do it, I'm further removed from this goal. Yeah. So setting that big goal and for me to transform as a person was something that was very important to me. And I knew that the person that was going to finish that race was going to be a different person than the person I was at the point of starting it, right? And that for me was very exciting because I'm like, imagine the mental and physical transformation I'm going to go throughout this journey and imagine if you reach it. Like it was very much a like, what if, you know, everyone's like, oh, you can't do it, this, that, that. I'm like, what if I can? Like, what if I finish this 100K 12 months from now? It'll be insane, like for me personally. And so those were kind of the three main reasons.
All right. And you mentioned a lot about sacrifice and throughout when you were mentioning your journey and the reasons. So tell me how you managed that, like how, like mentally, how you sacrificed sleep when you know you could have just slept for an extra hour or the trade-offs. So whether if it's dinners, whether if it's nights out, whether if it's the occasional beer that you want to have with the boys. So how did you manage all that, the sacrifice, the trade-offs?
So the first thing was communication. So having a very clear like chat with my boys, my family, with us, with my wife, and say, like, I'm not going to be there as much for the next 12 months. I'm not going to be able to come to a lot of the things that you guys schedule and do. And I hope you can respect that. Like, because this is something that I want to do. And everyone I spoke to was like, yo, like, we have your back. We're here to support.
Between you and yourself, what did you tell yourself in order to make that sacrifice? So telling people and getting their support, it's sometimes easy, sometimes not, depending on people. But you know, if they love you, they're going to be behind 100%. Yeah. What did you tell yourself in order to keep that consistency and tell yourself that, you know what, I'm going to lose time with family and loved ones?
So the why needs to be strong enough.
Okay.
Right? So as long, and it's with any goal. Like if the why is strong enough, everything else will follow. If the why is inauthentic, artificial, etc., like one of those things is not gonna work, whether it's a discipline piece, the work ethic, or like the sacrifice or whatever. So for me, it took a lot of like internal, just writing things down and goal setting and meditating on it and whatever else in order for me to really cultivate and like narrow down, these are the reasons why I do it. And are they strong enough for me to stick with this for 12 months? And then you create a support system around you, right? Like the type of people I hung out with over the last 12 months whether it's yourself, whether it's my coaches, whether it's the entire support system of people, whether it's Asma or my family or my other friends, they were so like dialed into this goal where it almost became a little bit their goal as well in order for me to achieve this.
Yeah.
So whether it came down to food or like, where are we going to eat tonight? Or like going to sleep on time or like whatever it may be, everyone was super aware of this and they understood it, which was like the most helpful thing in the world, right?
So we got a couple of questions about, because we all know you had an injury throughout this, and there's a question about injury and recovery. But before we get to that, before the injury, what was the lowest point that you went through? Like there, and 100% there was a low point. What was it? Why did it happen? And how did you get out of it? And I know probably because you had a strong why, but if it's a low point, the why isn't just enough. So what
yeah,
took me through that?
Well, so the low point was...
And when did it happen?
So it happened in, I think end of January.
That was the what? Like, when did you decide to do it?
I decided to do it in May last year.
Okay.
And I registered in August.
Uh-huh.
Everything was going super smoothly.
Mm.
And then in end of Jan, I got sick and injured at the same time. So I was sick for 8 days. I couldn't get out of bed for 8 days. Mm. And then I went back to train one day and I got injured and was out of running for like 2 weeks. That was by far my lowest point. Like that was...
The injury was your lowest point.
That period for 8 days of being on the couch sick and not being able to work out at all. And mind you, like we're 2.5 months away from the race, right? So those two things combined for me
was your lowest point.
Yeah, because it brought so much doubt to my mind. I was like, how am I going to finish this run? And maybe it was also because like I felt like I hadn't done enough yet. Like I was kind of, so for everyone listening, like the way it works with ultra training, for instance, is the couple of months before your run is when you have the most volume, just in terms of like you run the most miles or kilometers miles per week. So I was about to go into that, right? Like, so for me, it was also a very key point. So all of a sudden, like for 16, 20 days, I'm not able to run. And so a lot of things start going to your mind about, you know, am I going to be able to finish this race? Like, what if I can't? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that was definitely the low point.
And was it just doubt or was it also withdrawal symptoms? Because you've been running for like 10 months straight, and then you had 2 weeks without running and you felt that a routine got broken, or, you know, you didn't get your dosage.
Yeah, 100%. Because like running also became like a meditation, right? So it always, meditation / therapy. Like you go out for long runs over the weekend. Yes, they're very difficult, and yes, it was hot, and yes, this and that. But like that time by yourself for hours on end, it's almost like a silent retreat, right? Like I don't listen to music when I run, so it's like totally quiet. I'm in the mountains typically, so there's no one around you. And to not have that for a few weeks, I think you're right. I haven't even thought about that, but I think you're right. Like that also definitely got to me. And it's like for yourself, right? Like when you can't exercise for
I know.
For
That's
a week.
Why I asked you.
Yeah. And you've had this recently where like you couldn't run.
Anything.
Yeah, you couldn't do anything.
I couldn't run. I couldn't play paddle. I couldn't do anything.
And mentally, one, there's this thing of something is holding me back, right? Like you can't do it because there's an injury.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is the act of doing it brings you so much like peace, fulfillment, etc.
No, I became obnoxious. And you know what's the funny thing is that I told people beforehand, I'm like, listen, there's 2 hours a day that I'm missing on releasing energy and releasing stuff, which is probably still stored in me. So if I'm really quick or snappy or whatever, like I apologize in advance. You know.
But do you? And the thing is, I guess there's also no other, like there's no alternative, right? Like maybe it's meditation or something like that, but it's not like this physical exertion.
Yeah.
That you can get going.
To me, it's like you feel that part of your me time has gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's also the time that like, it's one of the rare times that we're not connected.
True.
Right? Like when you play paddle for an hour and a half, like it's not like you're checking your phone midpoint. True. Like you're just like, you're off. And like now when you're injured, you're connected the entire day.
100%.
Yeah. So that's probably another thing that like gets to you.
So for a lot of us that have never done 100K, take me through your training plan and your recovery plan.
Okay. So again, like, I'm very lucky and grateful that I trained with someone who had run 100K before. So he obviously...
For fun. He runs 100K for fun.
For fun.
God bless you, Joao.
Yeah. I guess I also did it for fun, but he knew the ins and outs, right? So he knew about strength, endurance, nutrition, like the whole nine yards. When me and him first got together, he's like, okay, cool. He's like, it's quite simple, just in terms of structurally speaking. He's like, the first few months are going to be very much focused on strength. So you're going to build the muscles that you need in order to run. And you're going to do this for, like, we're in the gym four times a week. And we're running twice a week. And those two times per week were literally like one hour runs. Like, they weren't like super long runs. And we did this for like a good 3 months. So for 3 months, I wouldn't run more than, and we're talking like May, June, July, I wouldn't run more than 10K in one go. And it was very strength focused. The longer time went on, the strength work started coming down and the run started dialing up. I wouldn't run, on average, I wouldn't run more than three times a week.
Okay.
Twice during the week. And those runs were typically 10K upwards, between 10 and 20K. And then the weekends would be the long runs. So the weekends, I mean, I went to Shauka, which is an hour away from Dubai, and it's basically like the mountains and the desert. I went to Shauka almost every weekend after the Dubai summer until like 2 weeks before the race, and spent a lot of time training there. And that was, I loved it. It was super, like, to someone else, it might be super boring, because basically what we did was a 5.5K up, 5.5K down loop where you're just running through trail. And I would run that like 3-4 times and would spend like 4, 5, 6 hours there just running up and down, running up and down. And the reason we did the up and down is just because we had the car at the starting point, and the car would have like cool box like the whole nine yards in it. So like that was like the fueling point. But yeah, so we started off with a lot of strength work that decreased. Volume of running increased. And towards the end, I think the last like 3 weeks before we started tapering down was like hell weeks. Like those were like, I would do 4 runs in 2 days, followed by a 6 hour run on a Sunday.
That was the volume part.
That was the volume part. And this was like, it's also a confidence builder, because like you finish, if you can finish runs like that, where you're running 15K in the morning, 15K in the evening, 15K the following day, 15K the following evening, and then 60K, or sorry, 40K like the day after that. If you can finish those 3 days, I mean, like psychologically, you start feeling very confident about yourself and your ability. So that was, that was a very interesting, it was a very interesting journey, because you start learning a lot about your own limits and like where you can go and what you can do.
Before we get to the race, recovery. Mm. So you just mentioned that there were days where you had 15 kilometers morning, 15 kilometers at night, the next day same, and then a day of 40 or 4 days a week of strength training. Take me through your recovery process, because bro, me being injured and me for the past couple of years understanding more about recovery, it's super important. But what kind of recovery did you do for something of this magnitude?
Okay, so I'll break it down to also make it like a little bit more actionable, because like obviously people listening to this, you know, your type of training will differ to my training, but like there's certain principles that that are very helpful, starting with sleep. I never sleep less than 8 hours a night till date. Like I always sleep between 8 and 9 hours. Hugely beneficial, right? Because the recovery happens overnight. The second thing was nutrition. So I was on a very clean diet with Matter Nutrition here in Dubai, meal plan company here in Dubai. I was on 3,000 calories a day, roughly, just because I was burning around that.
Yeah.
And my macros were very much in place, just in terms of the split between protein, fats, and carbs. And so there was that. Then there was the supplementation piece. So supplementation, for the people out there, one important note I'll make is, like, everything depends on your blood work, right? Like for a Kawi to go and take X amount of magnesium and fish oil and this and that, like, is great, but like you wouldn't know how much to take if it's not based on like data, stuff that's going on in your body. Now, you can find companies like Bionic that will come to your house and like do your blood work and basically tailor a supplement to your blood work, or you can get your blood work done and do it yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Like figure out yourself, okay, cool. Like I'm deficient in magnesium and vitamin D. Let me up that. So I did a bunch of blood work ongoing and adjusted my supplement dose accordingly.
And that was all through Bionic, or you also did some stuff by yourself?
No. So I did Bionic and then supplemented on top, because one of the things that I learned was something like magnesium depletes much faster when you're very active, right? So Bionic, the Bionic supplement was based on a snapshot of my health or my blood, but wouldn't take into account like how my burn rate of magnesium. Okay. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I would up that dosage. So I would take the staples, vitamin D, vitamin C, magnesium citrate, and omega-3. Mm-hmm. So I would take that. And then I had like more, I suppose, special supplements like Unbroken, which I know you've taken before as well.
I love Unbroken.
Which is like a live muscle recovery.
Naturally made from salmon.
Naturally made from salmon. You just pop it into your water and you drink it like before, after, or during your workout. So that was super helpful. I would take NMN. I would take a whole bunch of different things. But like that really helped with recovery. Yeah. And then like fueling correctly for my workouts. So that one comes with like the nutrition piece, mm-hmm. knowing when to eat, when to drink, hydrate. And then like during my runs, ensuring I take the right amount of carbs through carb bars, gels, sodium, hydration, etc. And then the last piece I would mention obviously is hydration. So hydration is super, super important, like just to generally function during the day, but also as someone who's an athlete or is performing. And I'll give you my best possible thing that I can tell you. Like if you're drinking water regularly, and you know this, there's no electrolytes in it, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no magnesium, potassium, or sodium in it. And you're losing these things throughout the day. You lose these things extra when you sweat.
Yeah.
When you sweat, where you're losing salt. Salt equals sodium. So how to replenish this and keep it at the same level? There's a bunch of different like sachets and brands that you can buy. One is Humantra, which is like based here in Dubai, which I highly recommend for anyone who's like not as active but wants to focus on their hydration. Yeah. I take a brand called Element, which is like super aggressively high in sodium, but it's something that I needed. And man, like we'll get into the actual race soon, but that was my number one game changer or savior during the run, was Element. It was like just totally unmatched. Like you take it and then all of a sudden like your energy bumps up, you know? So that was
very high on sodium.
Yeah.
As a Arab, I must ask, you didn't have any dates?
Oh, no, I did.
Oh, okay, just check, because dates are important.
Dates, and by the way, dates are like best possible pre-workout for me.
Or during the run. I had dates when I just did a 10K, you know, I'm a zero shy from what Stefan did, but I had like 8 dates inside my running pouch.
Yeah, I think for me, I don't know if you had this, but for me, the struggle after a little bit longer, like I would say early on in the run, I'd be able to take it. But then just the act of like chewing and stuff was a bit hard for me.
Yeah, it was annoying. Yeah, yeah. You're right.
But honestly, dates, and anyone could tell you this who was interacting with me over the last 12 months, like I'll have like 5-6 dates today.
Nice.
I love them. And they're so good for you. Like I just read some research on it, like how beneficial they are to your health.
I think me and you both of us follow Tamara, and she posted something about dates, so it's that one.
That's good.
What about ice baths, massages, anything around that before we go to the race?
So a couple of things. Oh yeah, sorry, I did forget to mention that part of recovery. So I went to see a physio probably once every 2 weeks.
Okay.
I went to anatomy rehab here in Dubai. I spoke to a lot of people who have been through something similar. Tamara Ghazi is one of them, who always pointed me in the right direction around recovery. I did saunas. I didn't do ice baths. And one of the reasons I didn't do it is there's a few studies on it which say that you need to let your body naturally inflame in order to heal itself. And that if you're doing strenuous exercise, to not do an ice bath at least 5 hours until that finishes.
Okay.
In order for your body to go through this inflammation process. And the thing is, I was always working on it.
Yeah. But is that why you stopped the trend of like sending us pictures with you dipping your feet into an ice bucket?
I did that once in a while. I did that once in a while, but it was more like psychological.
Okay,
fair enough. Although I do think it helped a lot, but I stopped doing it directly after my runs. I started doing it like if I wasn't working out on any given day, I would do it in the evenings. So I didn't really do ice baths. I did a lot of sauna. I did a lot of physio, a lot of massage. And yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah.
So training's done. You get onto this plane. How many days before the race did you get to Italy?
So we went. So the race was on the 25th of March. We went on the 20th.
Okay. Take me through that mental. Did you train when you were in Italy before the race? Did you do any training? Do any runs?
Yeah. So we went for one, like 30-minute run.
Okay.
As soon as we landed. Because like one of the things about traveling is like you got to reset your body.
Mm.
So as soon as you land, got to the hotel, dropped our stuff off, and we went for like a 30-minute run.
Okay.
But that was it.
So take me through those 5 days before the race. You're in Italy. You saw the track where you're going to start. You're not training. It's just you're just fueling. What was going through your head every single day getting closer?
Yeah. So for everyone who's listening, we did the race in Italy. In an area called Chianti, which is like in Tuscany. We landed in Rome, spent a couple of days in Rome, and I arrived with like a bunch of instructions from my coach. He was like, firstly, run as soon as you land.
Yeah.
Secondly, he's like, there's going to be a lot of temptations in terms of food, and you're going to think like...
Carbs, I need carbs.
And you're going to think all carbs are kind of the same. So he was like, it's very important that you... Like one, eat as clean as possible. Like don't take any cream or cheese or like don't overdo it on meat and obviously fried stuff and whatever. But also don't overdo it on fiber. Like don't have too many vegetables and these sort of things. He's like, now is really time to carb, right? But like do it in a healthy-ish way.
Okay.
So you're basically going to have... plain pasta with tomato sauce, toast with honey, toast with jam and peanut butter and whatever. And like that's sort of it. So the diet part of it was like very boring. Hydrated, took a lot of elements, took all my supplements continuously, just let like my body do its thing. When we got to Chianti.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. We saw like we saw where like kind of the route of how, where we were gonna run and man like we were so intimidated. Like it was my friend Louis and I and Asma was there too, and like we would go for walks and we would see, because they already set up the course, right? So we would see like the signs of okay, run this way and run that way and run this way and run that, and we were like, it's only uphills and downhills. Like everywhere we walked it was up a slope or down.
That's not
a slope.
What the brochure said.
Yeah. I was like, it's not, because also like from a training standpoint, yes, we train in the mountains and yes, it was uphill downhill, but like didn't overly focus on like 90% of it being uphill, right? Or downhill. Like we ran a lot of flats and like so I spoke to my coach and I was like, listen, like this is the deal. Like this is kind of, and maybe that's just a failure on my side in terms of preparation. And understanding a bit more about the course. But also another fun fact is like no one spoke English there. So whenever we would reach out to the organization and even ask them about simple things like, oh, where should we book our hotel? They're like, sorry, we don't speak like Italiano only, you know? And I was like, okay.
I think what you didn't do is study your opponent. And I think for people that that have such goals, they refer, like you saw the track, you're like, I'm going to dominate this track, but you need to see that track as an opponent, or you need to really understand your opponent, because any fighter or basketball team or tennis player or whatever, they understand their opponent, whether if it's how they play, any habits they do. And this is where you should have studied the track where you didn't, because you're like, I'm just going to train to run 100K.
Yeah. Knowing there was up and down, like I wasn't under the assumption. I wasn't under the assumption that like we were not going to have any
up and down,
any inclines, but like just the extent of it, we were unaware of. So we went to pick up our like kit and all that kind of stuff the day before the race, and like saw a lot of the people that were taking part. And everyone was like so much older than us. Like so I'm 33, Louis 33. And I think like the next person was like 38, 39 upwards. And we're like, this is super interesting that it's an older crew.
Two, what are we going to run when we're 38?
Yeah. Secondly, everyone had sticks. So like for people who don't know, like a lot of the time when you're hiking or like you're doing trail runs, like people use these sticks in order to one, run faster and walk faster, but two, like just to minimize impact. And Louis and I were like sticks is a weakness. So we were like, we're not going to do sticks. And we were probably, so there were 250 people running in the race. There were probably four people who didn't do sticks. Two of those people probably didn't finish. And then there was Louis and I. So we should have probably, we had this discussion the day after, like admitting to our weakness and saying next time we do this, we're going to use sticks.
Use sticks.
So that was kind of the days leading up to it. Like we slept really well. We slept long. We minimized any physical activity during the day. We would go for walks. We would stretch a bit. But outside of that, like not much at all.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, race day, you're standing there before they did the countdown or shot the gun or whatever it was. Tell me what went down.
Yeah, so we woke up at 2 a.m. Ungodly hour. So we went to sleep at like 7. We tried to go to sleep at 7 p.m. And kind of worked. I mean, I got like 6 hours of sleep, which was more than I expected. Louis and I woke up. We had a bunch of food, like whatever we can like stomach at that point, headed to the race village. And firstly, mind you, it's quite cold. Like it was like 8 degrees. So, and coming from Dubai, like I had the most layers on from anybody there. Yeah. Like I had gloves on, like I had the whole nine yards. And thank God that I did. But you don't like the feeling of being at that start line is a strange one because like you're
there.
You're there
now. There's no way I'm going to get back.
There's no coming back from this. That 100%. Yeah. Like we looked around, saw a lot of sticks, which like further just like demotivated us about the stick part, or actually fueled us, I think.
Yeah.
Where we were like, we're the tough guys here. But you don't get that feeling of like butterflies because because you know you're going to be there for a very long time.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not like a 10K where you're trying to finish in like 35, 40 minutes. It's more like, okay, cool. Like we're going to start now. This is going to be the whole of the next day is going to be dedicated to this. We purposefully started last. Like we went to the back of the pack because we were like,
we don't have sticks.
We don't. No, more like it'll be rewarding to start at the back and then slowly take people on versus starting at the front and then people taking you on. Just from a motivation standpoint, like if you see people 100 meter in the distance, like you just want to go after them and like and take them over. But that was sort of the feeling at the beginning.
What was your fueling strategy throughout this whole race?
So going in, I had a few really, really good conversations with people who have done this before, which was super helpful. Those people basically told me, they were like, listen, there's a few things you need to keep in mind. One is you need to consume X amount of carbs. I'm not going to bore everyone with like the exact stats, but like X amount of carbs per hour, X amount of water per hour, and then like salt. Right? Like you need to get salt into your body. So the four things that I had were this carb bar from a brand called Morton. And Morton is by far the best when it comes to fueling for endurance racing. It's super clean and like easy to consume. So I had the bars, carb bars. I had gels. One was caffeinated, one was non-caffeinated. I had salt tablets, 100 mg of sodium. And then I had water, all in this backpack, right?
And how much did the backpack weigh?
Good question. So like it was a liter and a half of water. Mm-hmm. And then imagine like 10 protein bars.
Okay.
And then my phone. And I think that was it. Like it had an extra t-shirt or something inside. So it was pretty heavy to begin with, right? Like, and then it becomes less and less and less until you get to the fueling station and you refuel. So every 45 minutes, every hour, I would get a gel in and a few bites of the carb bar. And then every hour and 15 minutes, I would take a salt tablet. And then throughout the hour, I would drink water.
Okay.
Like my strategy was kind of like every time we're walking up an uphill, I would take a few sips of water. So that was sort of the strategy, knowing that like we were going to pass a lot of the fueling stations. So every 15 kilometers, there's a fueling station that you stop at. They have, it was funny because it's Italy. So they have wine.
In case you don't want to continue.
Yeah. They had wine, cold cuts and cheese, which for me was like hilarious. But then they had pasta. Then they had like Nutella with white toast. They had brownies. They had fruits. They had like a bunch of different things. So in the beginning, the strategy was like just get as many carbs in as possible. So I would just like eat pasta, plain pasta with olive oil.
Would you stop and eat, or would you take it and while you
were... No, you would stop for about, we would stop for about a minute, 2 minutes.
Okay.
I kind of just kept moving because I know from previous experiences, if I stop moving or if I sit down, it's game over.
Yeah, your legs will think you're done.
Yeah. With other people, they can do it. Like I see a lot of people sitting down, standing up and going again, like props to them, but I just couldn't do it. So that was in the beginning. But then the fueling strategy towards the end is you can't like physically consume more of these carb bars. Like you just, like I couldn't stomach them. Whenever I had a gel, like I would almost like gag because I was like, this is disgusting. Like I don't want any more of these. The salt tablets started tasting horrible. So then the strategy was whenever you get to a fueling station, whatever seems appealing to you, eat it, right? Like whether it's the pasta, whether it's the cold cuts, the cheese, like candy, whatever it is. Like whatever you want to consume, consume it because your body's like attracted to it, right? So like I was like eating like I probably had like a handful of candy, like just sugar. Then I ate a bunch of pasta. The wine was still a no-go for me because I was like, who in their right mind is drinking wine during an ultra? So it was things like that. And then Element, I mean, just saved my life. Every fueling station, I would take a sachet of Element, put it into a 0.5 liter bottle of water, and just drink that over like a 5 minute period. Okay. And it was like I was back to life. So I think that was, I think that kind of summarizes the fueling.
What was the most difficult thing in this 100K?
Oh, God. It's a very obvious one for me. So there were two instances. Again, just to summarize so that people can visualize this. You're on a trail. You're running. You start in the dark, right? 4 a.m. And you finish in the dark.
So this is the most difficult, most scariest part of the run you're going to tell us now.
I'm going to tell you a combination of the two. It's a lot of uphills and downhills. I think 90 to 95% was uphill, downhill. 5% of it was flat. And so, like, when we reached the 50K mark, there was a 7 kilometer uphill. So imagine, like, firstly, running 7 kilometers generally, it's not like the easiest thing in the world, but it was only uphill. So, like, it would go uphill for, like, let's say 200 meters, then it would go straight for like 10 meters because you just wouldn't see that stretch. Mm. And then it would go uphill again. This went on for 7K. And like, so Louis and I, our strategy was like walk the uphills, run the downhills, run the flats. And I hadn't ever hiked 5K uphill only, right? Like I've never done that before. Nor did we know that it was coming, 7K, sorry. Nor did we know that it was coming. But thankfully, it was like during the day, we were still super fresh. Like 50K, you're still functioning quite well. Mentally, you're still quite strong. It was light outside. The weather was nice. It wasn't too challenging of a terrain. So we finished 7K, got to the fueling station, and you just saw like everyone was like destroyed from that bout. And then I was having a discussion with one of the organizers, and I'm like, who decided to put a 7K in here? He's like, that was not the difficult part. At the 85 kilometer mark or the 80 kilometer mark, you're going to have a 5K uphill.
He told you that?
Yeah. Oh. You're going to have a 5K uphill It's much more challenging than this one. I was like, oh my God, okay. Lo and behold, we get to the 79K fueling station and again, having conversation with people and they were like, okay, it's about to get real. Like, this is apparently as well where a lot of people drop out. So Louis and I get started. Now, what we were told in passing is there's animals in this forest that we're about to go to. It's now, I think, 8 p.m. It's cold and it's dark. It's windy. It had just rained. So you got to imagine the following scenario. Five kilometers of uphill. You have a little like headlamp on so you can see probably like 5 meters in front of you. There's mud. You have to cross streams. There were big rocks that we had to climb over. And we kept going and like catching our breath every like 3-4 minutes. My heart rate reached 195 at one point, which was like filthy. And then Louis and I walked. And so, okay, a few things here. We're walking up this hill and in this forest, you've got like these massive tree trunks, like the huge width, 40 meters high. And like, they're just the tree trunks. So there's no leaves or anything on it. Oh my God. We get to this point and looking left and right, it's probably 100 meters in both sides. There's these tree trunks and probably like 200 meters ahead. First thing that happens is we get there and we just get hit by this crazy wind. Right, like super cold, chilly ass wind. That was one thing. The second thing is we're walking. It starts becoming very quiet and we just hear this like loud, like thumping sound of like an animal basically walking across. And Louis and I like just quickly glance at each other. We didn't even say a word and we just sped up like the walking and we just kept going. So that was one thing. Then I started hallucinating.
Oof.
Yeah, so that was a very, and I knew this was going to happen. Like everyone told me you're going to hallucinate, but basically I started seeing, so these tree trunks, some of them were white. So a mixture of white and darkness. I started hallucinating. So I started seeing like skeletons. Like every time I looked at them, like a skeleton would kind of pop out towards me. And I was like, yo, this is, And the thing is, you can't, like, I'm not really telling myself this is not real, this is real, right? Like, it's just like you have to deal with it on the spot, which was super, super hard. And all the while, we're going uphill. Like, it's 5 kilometers just going uphill. And I would see Louis was in front of me. I would look forward and just look at his reaction every time we get to the top of one hill. And I could see by his body language, if his body language is negative or positive, if there was another uphill coming across. So I think that was the hardest. Yeah, I think that was the hardest part, was that 5 kilometers. But after we finished that, so that 5 kilometers ended at like the 87, 88 mark. After that, we knew it was going to be all downhill until like closer to the finish. So we knew that if we got past that, like we could pass anything. We get to the fueling station after this 5K.
Which was what, 90?
89.
89, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, 89, there was another, the last fueling station before we finished. And it was like, I don't know how to explain it, but like we walked in and it was like the energy of the room, it felt like someone had died, you know? Like it was like, you see all these people sitting out, some were just staring in front of them. Some were asleep. Some people like looked afraid. Others were just like exhausted and depleted. And this was a point where, like they told us, they were like, a lot of people drop out. And 240 people started the race. 190 or something finished. So 50 people dropped out. And those 50 people dropped out either because of situations like this, like they just couldn't continue after that. They didn't make the cutoff times because you needed to get to each fueling station at a particular time. Or they got injured or whatever else. But like there was literally like 10 people in that room. And I told Louis, I was like, yo, we need to get out of here like ASAP because I don't want to get dragged into this energy. Like I just want to take my stuff and go.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's what we did. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. No. The hallucinations were the worst, bro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, by the way, even while you were speaking at it, I think you went through, like, as you're, like, you had your, like, you crossed your hands and you're, like, sitting and you're, like, talking about it like this. Like, when you look at the footage, look at yourself as soon as it talked about hallucination and those trees. Throughout the race, were you talking to yourself as first person or third person?
It was more like a "you got this, bro" sort of thing. I don't know if that's third or first. Maybe it's second.
Like, what were you telling yourself? How were you speaking to yourself?
So to give a bit of context, before we started the race, like, we didn't give each other any outs. And by no outs, I mean, like, the only way that we were not going to finish this run is if we broke something, right? Like, if I broke my ankle or if I broke my leg or whatever, obviously I'm not going to, like, I might have tried to continue, but, like, I probably wouldn't finish it. There was no other out.
Okay.
Right?
And what were you telling yourself? Not to lose to yourself.
Which was pretty much that.
Okay.
Like, every time things got a little hard, specifically on that last uphill, every time things got a little hard, I was like, there's no out.
Okay.
Like, there's no out. Like, you're going to do this. There was also moments of, you know, thinking about other people. So I would think about friends, I would think about family, and I would think about, like, how proud they would be when you finish and cross the finish line and all that kind of stuff. You also start envisioning, and I've done this since I started training, very powerful tool, is envisioning you crossing the finish line, right? Mm-hmm. Like, manifesting it, basically. Yeah. Like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. This is the celebration I'm going to do. This is my facial reaction. This is what you're going to feel. You're going to start doing all those things. Another thing, and this, I don't know if this answers your question, but it's more about, like, how do you not quit?
Yeah.
It's thinking about, imagine you quit. Like, imagine the feeling of quitting. Yeah, like, imagine, like, at 89, you say, you know what? Too hard. I'm not going to do it. And you're, like, at that point, well, it was 103 kilometers. So you're 14 kilometers away from achieving this goal that you trained for a year for. Imagine quitting at 89.
Yeah.
And imagine getting into the shower. Like, for the first 2 minutes, you're going to be like, oh my God, the shower is amazing. Then you're going to be like, I can't believe I quit.
True.
Like, if I could go back right now and finish it, I would, right? It's just because it's this momentary lapse of mental toughness and pushing through. So these were all of the things that I kept telling myself. But the biggest cheat code for me was there was no out. Like, did I break something? No. Okay, cool. Keep going, you know? And you adjust accordingly. Like, when you're out of breath, take a second, you know? Like, when you have a bit of pain, like, analyze what's going on. Like, what's the solution to it? I at the 50K mark, I started feeling my IT band. And I was like, oh my God, 50K to go with this. And a video that I watched recently says, don't give your pain a voice. Meaning, just don't acknowledge it. Don't acknowledge it as an injury.
That's strong.
Right? Like, just, it is what it is. Keep going. Because as soon as you say, okay, like, this hurts a little bit, all the other little aches and pains in your body, you're going to be like, hey, what about me? What about me?
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then you're going to be like, oh, like, you guys got me. And then it's just game over. So there were all these little tricks that I would play on my own mind, which were very helpful. And we went through, like, we passed a few people who had this, like, super negative demeanor, right? Like, I don't think I can do this. I'm like, yo, don't talk to me about this. I'm not your guy.
Go drink wine.
Yeah, yeah. Go drink some wine and, like, call it a day. But, like, I'm not here for you, unfortunately. Yeah. Typically I would be, but, like, this is all me today. So
Reem Hamid, she sent me an article and you mentioned, and I want to ask you about that, where it says that endurance athletes, ultra athletes, they, when they decide to do something or before a race, when they decided, like, way time before, their motivation is divided into four. So there is a psychological motivation. So that's like life, meaning, self-esteem, etc. There's achievement, which means personal goals, competition. There's social, which is either affiliation or recognition. And then there's physical, which is health, orientation, weight concern. Did you sit down beforehand and state these whys or divided your motivations? One, did you do that? What were they per the categories we just mentioned? And how often did you remind yourself, or what was the most important one of these four categories?
Can we go one by one? Mm. So the first one you said was psychological, which would mean what?
Like life meaning, self-esteem.
Yeah. Psychological for me was proving a point, right? And I think this was one of my whys I mentioned at the beginning. It was like proving a point to myself where it's like imagine you can do this. Like what's going to happen to your mind and body? Like imagine the transformation you're going to go through. And if you do this, imagine how you can influence and inspire other people to either for them to run 100K or for them to run or for them to pick up something else. That was, because when I mentioned my why initially, I think those were two separate points. Those two points were for me the most important thing, like by far. And I reminded myself of those all the time.
Okay.
But you also envision yourself already like as an ultra runner. Like for me, when I was training for it, I never run more than 42, right? I was already 100K finisher. Already put myself in that bracket where I was like, no, it's done. Like, I'm going to embody this and live it and breathe it. Yeah. So that's psychological.
Achievement, which means it's like a personal goal or like that competitive nature that you had of doing something or beating people or doing something that people aren't going to do, which is, I think that falls to what you mentioned about being uncommon.
Yeah. Being uncommon for me was very, very important. I just believe in like living a life of discomfort. Like doing things that make you extremely uncomfortable.
Out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Like because within that you'll find growth and you'll find fulfillment. Mm. It's a very strange thing, right? Because you're putting your body through agony week in, week out. And then even when you finish a race, it's like, okay, what's next? Like it's like an itch that you're trying to scratch. But like within that discomfort, there lies so much growth.
Yeah.
There lies so much growth. So so for me, that's how I like to look at living life and all the goals that I set. Not all the goals that I set, but like goals that I set that are larger are always going to fall within that category where it's like, is this going to push me outside of like my day-to-day, my comfort zone, my this, my that?
Yeah.
Do I need to transform and become better at what I do or better at life in order to achieve this goal?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, let's do it.
Social. So social is more about affiliation, recognition, which I'm guessing is like the shallowest one out of the categories, but like, was that something here where I want to do this because I want to be affiliated with ultra marathon athletes or with performing athletes and not just people that are doing it as a hobby? Do you want it because you want to be part of certain communities in globally because not everyone does 100K? So was that a reason in your head or was it more like subconsciously like you were doing it but you just never said it out loud or never thought of it out loud?
Yeah, so I started thinking about this out loud only when maybe a little bit while I was doing it. Like I definitely wanted to be known as like part of the 100K club.
Yeah.
But also I just want to be known as like a savage. Like I wanted to be known. I want to be known as like a beast, right? Like I don't want to come across as someone who like settles, as someone who does the bare minimum. Like I want to be known as someone who sets obscene goals for himself and achieves them. Like someone who doesn't just like talk about it, but someone who does it. Because like, you know this, I know this. So many people we speak to are just all talk. And like, and I now quickly pick up on it where I'm like, you're not going to do that. Yeah. You're not going to do that. And I want to be known as someone, I say it, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I want to be known as that person. And that might be a bit like, I don't know what the word is. Cocky. I don't know, don't do that.
You know what I mean. Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like I'm still a humble person.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't want to be full of myself. But at the same time, I want to be known as someone who just like kills it. Simple.
The last one is physical. So it's like more health orientation, weight concern. Was that anything like, were you doing it to become healthy or something? Or like that was like, you knew that was part of the process?
No, let me make it very clear. Like running 100K is not healthy.
And it doesn't give you a six pack.
It doesn't give you a six pack. Like you lose muscle, you burn 10,000 calories in one run. But there's ways to mitigate damage, I suppose. Like that's why we built a lot of muscle in advance. Like I didn't have any injuries. Like people are like, oh, how are your knees and how are your back? I'm like, zero problems because I've trained for those. And I found ways to optimize it. Like for me, energy optimization was very important because if I'm running 6 hours, like the next day, I didn't want to be in a position where I couldn't work.
Yeah.
Right. Or like I couldn't focus. Like it was very important for me that like I still had businesses to run. So I still needed to give my attention to that too. So that was very important for me to just mitigate that. And that came through like all the recovery strategies we spoke about. It came through predominantly sleep and supplementation and nutrition. But I didn't do it for to become healthier.
Okay.
No.
Now, take me. We're close to the finish line about this. Now, take me through the last 5K and then that feeling of crossing the finish line.
Okay. So we... Every so often in this race, you cross like a security checkpoint, and the security will then communicate to the finish line. Okay, cool. These guys, number 14 and number this, have just crossed.
What was your number?
14.
Okay.
I can't remember Louis. I think Louis was like 16 or something. Number 14 and 16 have just crossed the security checkpoint, and so they know you're X amount of time away. We got to 97, I think. We were at 97 and we passed a security checkpoint and the guy was like, oh, you're 4 kilometers away. And I looked at my watch and I'm like, I think we're like 7 kilometers away. I was like, aren't we like 7 kilometers? He's like, no, 4 kilometers, 100%. I was like, I looked at Louis. I was like, yo, we're only 4K away. This is amazing. I thought it was longer than this. My watch must be wrong. We get 4K in. We're in the middle of a forest. Okay. We're in the middle of a forest. And Louis and I looked at each other and we were like, this guy lied to us. Or he just like, he's either very evil or he just didn't know. Like it's part of like, you know, tactics. Yeah, yeah. And these things start getting to you, you know, because that part, like we're like 20 hours in, bro. Like when you're at 101K and then you still have these 2-3 kilometers to go, it makes a huge difference, right? Then we get to like, let's call it civilization. Like we get to a road where there's people whatever. And again, there's a security checkpoint. And we were like, which way do we go? She was like, that way. I was like, okay, fantastic. How far are we? She's like, 1 kilometer. We are like, 1K? We're like, we'll be there in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Do 1 kilometer. We're in like some field somewhere. And I was like, she also lied to us. This is horrible. And at this point, both of us were like, we weren't, how do I explain this? Like, we were actually tired.
Yeah.
Like, we were ready to go to sleep. You know, like, that was the feeling. Because you're up for, at this point, 22 hours. Like, we're almost 20 hours into the race. So that part was a bit, like, it was quite tough. But it was just like something, okay, let's just get through it. Let's just keep going. And then these evil organizers, the last kilometer of the race is uphill. So it's not like they could finish on a flat, right? Like they have to do another uphill. So we're just constantly marching uphill. Then there's like a staircase. I'm like, a staircase, really? Like you had to help, like you had to make us climb upstairs. We climb up these stairs and then we recognize because it's the same as the starting point. Yeah. Like, so we recognize, okay, cool, we're here. So we get to probably like 100 meters from the finish line. And at that point, like we had friends who came and supported us from Wales. Us and my wife was obviously there. And so you start hearing the cheers and like you start hearing the people cheering and the organizers and like whatever else. And that's when it was like, it wasn't emotional though. Like it wasn't like I thought I was going to like break down and cry, you know, but I think like you're so emotionally and physically depleted at that point. Where it's more like, oh my God, I did it. Like, it's done. Like, we can go to sleep now, you know? And it was a very, very memorable, like, magical moment. It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
What was the first thing you told yourself when you crossed the finish line?
You did it. You did it. Like, it's something that no one can take away from you, right? Like, everyone who... Whether you doubted it publicly towards me, whether you doubted it privately, for me, it's never really about that. Like, it's not about proving people wrong, but it is about doing things that no one can take away from you. Like, I would have forever run 103 kilometers. You know, no one's going to tell me you didn't because I can show you. So that was something that was very, very powerful, I think. Like, that feeling of, cool, you've done, like, you've put in the work for a year, and this is... like the fruits of your labor, right? Like this is now you've completed it. Yeah. No, it was powerful. It was a very powerful feeling. Very powerful feeling. And I mean, then we went home. So we finished, we got the medal, we got in the car, cheers. Obviously, like, Asma was like so proud, and my friends were super proud. I was proud. Louis was happy. We got home, man, like having to, let me tell you something, having to shower after like being on your feet for that long, just having the process of taking your socks off is just horrifying. But whatever, we showered, I ate whatever I saw lying in our kitchen. I think we had like two slices of pizza that were left over from earlier that day. And like without telling anyone, I just grabbed them and started eating them, and like had some fruit and water and whatever else, and then just passed out. Like,
no stretching, no nothing?
Or... No.
Oh, okay.
No.
What would you do differently, Stefan?
Sticks. 100%. 100%. For anyone who's going to run an ultra, like, buy sticks, try different ones, see what works for you, use them in your training. Like, that's one thing I would do for sure. I would study the route better.
Yeah.
That would be another thing. I would, no, I think that's about it. I think that's about it. Those are the main things.
Would you do it again, or do you now have another goal that you're set upon?
Should I announce it? I have one.
Announce it.
So we thought about, and this is how twisted my brain is. The day after the race, Louis and myself were on a train from Florence to Rome. It's a whole story in and of itself, but like, never make the decision to travel the day after your ultra.
That's like, another thing. That's
make sure you're thing. In a hotel with food nearby. It was the worst muscle pain I've ever had in my life. I couldn't walk for 2 days. But with that said, we were like, what's next? It's crazy. Like, how do you even think about that? Like,
you're still on a high, that's why.
No, but I'm stunned by the fact that I've put my body through 20 hours of pain. I woke up not being able to walk. I'm on a train, and I hate my life at that moment. Like, all I want to do is be in bed and just have like a plate of pasta next to me. We were like, what's next? And we didn't really answer it on the spot. We were like, it's got to be crazier than this, right? Like, there's no way we're going to do less than 100K or 100K again.
Yalla, announce it, bro.
So
what's the suspense?
So recently, I think like 2 weeks ago, we had a chat, and Tariq Rumi, the owner of Matter Nutrition, messaged me, and he was like, yo, like, what if you just do something in the UAE? I was like, okay, cool. So what we decided was 7 days, 7 Emirates, 7 marathons. So marathon a day for 7 days. Yeah. Like a marathon a day for 7 days in each Emirate is option number one. Option number two is to run across the UAE.
Oh, how many kilometers is that?
I think it's like 400 something.
It's feasible, like in terms of route?
That's what we're now in the process of deciding. The first one just sounds a lot sexier as well. So, and I think it's a little bit easier to organize. And I think it'll be a bit more fun as well, because I think if you're running from whatever, Ras Al Khaimah to Abu Dhabi and beyond, I think it's just going to be a lot of desert, and like, you can't really plan the route. And
so you're running from Emirate to Emirate, or in each Emirate you're going to run a marathon?
In each Emirate we're going to run a marathon.
Okay.
And so one, I wanted to do something at home, right? I want to do something here in the UAE. Two is, I think it's something cool that people can join in for. Like, if someone wants to run their first marathon, for instance, they can just pick a day and like join us. And three, like, we're just going to look at like putting together a team of people who might be crazy enough to join us. And like,
when are you thinking of doing it?
Think like February.
Next year?
Yeah. I think February. I think the next few months, I'm just going to focus on my strength training, because like I've just been depleted of muscle. So I'm going to focus on my strength training and then like get back to it. I've already messaged my coach. I was like, hey, like, want to do this? Do you think it's possible? He's like, yeah, of course. And then that was the end of the conversation.
Stefan Muller, honestly and personally, you inspire me. I love you. And I think, like, you know, a couple of days before, I was speaking with Hannah, and she was and because I went on my first run after the injury, which was last Sunday, and I did a 5K in 5:40 average pace, and she goes like, you know what, you actually run well.
Yeah, you do.
And I'm like, do I? And then she started playing with my head on a 21K.
Yeah.
To do a 21K. And I think after this conversation, I'm going to announce that I have decided now, just because of talking to you, that I'm going to do a 21K.
Ooh.
Honestly, man. Like, when? I don't know. But like, I just decided. Like, Khalas, step one is deciding.
Okay. Right?
Now I'll figure out where in the world you'll help me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, but let's figure out. But honestly, listening to you, talking to you, and I've known you for a very long time, and I've seen you through various stages. Legend, savage, and truly uncommon. And I can't wait to see what you do next, not just with the UAE, but I probably know you're also thinking about other stuff as well. And I want to see you throughout this ultra, not just the running ultra, but also what you're going to do in the business, family, hopefully. And everything to come.
I appreciate it. And really, I mean, I just want to make it very clear that like anyone can be uncommon. Like you can all be, you know, you can set crazy goals and achieve them yourself. I think it's just a matter of making that decision and creating a plan, sticking to it, and like building an ecosystem of people around you that are going to help you achieve that. Because if you're around energy drainers, it's never going to happen. If you're only going to be around people who tell you like, don't step out of your comfort zone, just like do what you're supposed to be doing, versus like what you think is right to do. I think if you get into that mindset, like now the feeling that you get is like a limitless feeling, you know, like nothing, there's nothing you can't do, whether from a mindset standpoint or from a physical standpoint. So I appreciate the kind words, and this has been a lot of fun.